This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 235 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com, and I am glad to say I've got bandwidth back. And I can actually talk to Glyn via Skype, as it should be. How are you, matey?
Are you there? Hello? No, I can hear you, Bruce. I've got to tell you, mate. I have to tell you, in all honesty.
Yeah.
I'm here. I sit here in great discomfort.
Oh, why is that?
All week long, I've had a nasty, nasty case of gas.
Okay.
Bad case of gas, dude.
What are you lusting after now?
For those not familiar with the acronym, it's gear acquisition syndrome.
That's it.
I've got all hot and heavy for the Canon 50mm 1.2.
Ooh, 1.2.
Yeah.
Wow.
The strange thing of this lustation. It's a new word, lustation.
Yeah.
Is I don't like the 50mm focal length.
I kind of relate to that in a way.
And so here I am. I don't like the focal length, yet I want the lens.
Now, I dare ask how much an f1.2 lens is going to set you back?
I think it's a couple of thousand.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I'm missing, it's like four or five times more expensive than the 1.4 for half a stop difference.
Yeah, right.
But the glass is four times the size, though, Bruce, and that counts for a hell of a lot.
Oh, okay. What's the diameter?
Oh, I don't care. Who cares? It looks sexy in the front. That's kind of all that matters. Yeah. Remember, it's a man sport. It's all about compensation. I'm compensating. I need a big, hefty. Yeah. It's I don't know. It's just. Yeah. What it is, there's two things going on in my head at the moment.
Okay.
I'm lasting after this lens for a reason, and the reason being I hate the 50mm focal length. I don't like shooting with it.
Right.
I can't visualize well with it.
Yeah.
It doesn't sit comfortably when I look through my camera. It doesn't feel right to look through as far as a perspective and angle. And that's all the reason why I feel the need to go out there and buy one.
Because you're unimpressed with the specs and you just want to see what it's like in the real world.
No, because I've used one before. I've used one a couple of years ago.
Oh, okay.
It's more the fact that because I don't shoot enough in that zone, that angle.
Yep.
I should.
Yeah, it's a funny thing with 50mm. You kind of feel like it's not wide enough, like a wide, so it doesn't give you that drama that you get from a wide-angle lens.
Yep.
And it doesn't give you that really nice, heavily compressed look you get from a 200, 208.
Exactly.
It kind of just sits in the middle doing nothing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's just there. But I think it's the same. If you love your 50, there's people out there who just rave about 50mm lenses. Maybe you should stop using it and start using the thing that you don't like. I don't like my 200mm. I don't like my 17mm or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of the creative process and building your ability for your vision is to go out there and shoot with your least favourite lenses.
Well, I think I said something along these lines after the weekend out at Trundle
that I
used my 50 a lot more than I thought that I would and quite enjoyed the experience.
Yeah. And I think your 50 did too, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Getting a run out of the bag and get into your hot little hands. I think creatively we need to do this. We need to break habits.
Yeah,
as much as possible.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm looking at, and here's the thing. I mean, Canon don't sponsor me. I know it's a shocking shame. Yeah. this is an investment I've got to make myself if I'm going to do it. I've got to justify to the trouble and strife and the kids, why they're not eating this week or the next several weeks, as the case may be. I'm sort of in the boat where people, like everyone else, you've got to sort of make a fairly educated decision about why you should get one. And, should I do it? Shouldn't I do it? I don't know. I'm trying to talk myself out of it, which means by next week I'll probably have one. That's what we do. It's the digital show in Melbourne next week, the big photo show. So I'll be slapping one on a camera for a while and just sort of familiarizing myself and just seeing. We'll see. But I got to tell you, part of the reason, of course, is my India trip. I'm shooting the Diwali lighting festival at night.
Oh, of course.
So lots and lots and lots of low light stuff.
Yeah, so you want the aperture, yeah.
Yeah, so that, and I'm thinking of a new camera too. So I'm trying to.
Oh my God.
I'm in that I know. Yeah, if you're going to have gas, you may as well have it bad.
exactly.
Yeah, my gear goes through a hell of a lot of rough treatment, and so my 5D2 is pushing 2 years old now, which doesn't sound long to most people, but if you look at it, you'd swear it's a 50-year-old camera. It's mostly silver now rather than black, because all the black's been chipped off all the time it's been dropped.
Right.
Yeah, the mode dial, it doesn't actually have anything on the mode dial, but just black, so you don't actually know what mode you're in. And it's probably well over its shutter activation expected lifespan. So, it's had a hard 2 years.
Yeah,
as you'd expect if you're working with it all the time.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm umming and ahhing about the next step down in Canon.
Oh.
from a 5D going down to the 6D.
Why?
Which in Canon's weird numbering system, the bigger the number, the cheaper the camera.
Right. So
if you've got a Canon 10,000, you didn't pay very much for it at all.
so what's the motivation to go down?
Oh, well, it's got gadgets.
Such as?
Well, built-in Wi-Fi for starters.
Oh, okay.
Which can be operated by your mobile phone.
Right.
So I can operate the camera, I can change shutter speed, aperture, touch the screen to where you want it to focus, etc.
Right.
So that's going to have some implications for, bit of the old voyeuristic shooting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, set up outside the neighbours next door and just sit there in the comfort of my lounge room and watch the footage. And also because it's wireless tethered shooting to your laptop, so rather than having to tether your camera to shoot, you can shoot and onto your iPad or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Rather than having to have an iFi card.
Yep.
You can just go straight from there. And built-in GPS.
Nice.
So, and being a person who travels a fair bit, having that sort of little trek of images, and so the whole point of this India trip is to build several travel presentations I'm doing.
Yep.
So it'd be kind of nice to link in images with GPS with mapping and stuff and show people how that works as well.
Definitely.
So that's kind of cool. And here's the other thing too. So it's not built as well as the 5D3.
Right.
It's missing a few, not many features, but its actual image quality is higher and its low light performance is better.
Is that because it's just newer technology in the image processor?
Well, no, it's more the fact that it's actually a lower megapixel sensor.
Yep, right.
So the pixels are further apart than each other.
Yep.
So there's less noise.
Yep.
So it's slightly better as far as high ISO performance, and it's got a slightly greater EV range as far as exposure, low light exposure ability. So
nice.
It's just got some extra stuff, and it's like $1,200 cheaper than the model above it.
Wow.
So I'll probably end up with the model above it. But can I really buy the slightly less expensive one? I don't think so. No, I might have to buy both. So that's another little trick for maybe taking to India as well. That'd be a kind of a nice little combination. The 6D with a 51.2 would make for a fairly nice piece of kit. To do the low light stuff, great low light performance of the camera combined with great low light performance of the lens.
Mm.
Should hit that lighting festival with their little candle lights and stuff pretty well, I'd imagine.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's my bad case of gas for the week. Just been flipping through all this sort of stuff. So I'm going to go see Canon next week at the digital show and say, look, I really think you should give me these things to take to India.
Absolutely.
Or at the very least, the lens.
You can only ask.
I know. Yeah. Then I'll go to the Sigma stand. And I'll see, I love Tamron lenses to pieces that just don't have something.
Right.
Really, really wide open, like a 1.2, really the only fixed focal length lens they've got is the 90mm macro, or they've got a 60mm as well, but that's for crop sensor, for non-35mm sensor cameras.
Right.
So, there's a certain temptation to that, so.
Excellent.
We'll see in a couple of weeks whether I no longer have gas. If I've still got it.
Now, we've got quite a lot to talk about this week.
We do.
Yep. Later in the show, we are actually going to be talking with a guest.
Are we?
We will be.
Cool.
But we'll just leave it like that. We'll just leave it as a tease for now.
Even I don't get to know.
No, oh, yeah. That's right.
Am I supposed to do my 3 seconds of research?
You'll manage. I came up with a few links this week that I wanted to share.
Did you?
Yeah, one was a thing on the NY Daily News, the New York Daily newspaper website. And this was a series of photographs where they've had an historical photograph of a scene from New York, and then someone's gone out and, you know, presumably all of these old photos were taken with a 50mm lens, and so they've gone out and shot a new image from the same spot with, you know, an equivalent focal length lens of today's, you know, view of that area. And then they've just sort of, you know, mapped the two images together and just... Yeah. You know, painted in just some of this old black and white scene from, you know, 50, 60 years ago in over the top of the modern scene. It's a great sequence of images.
Do you know, they stole my idea.
Did they really?
Yeah. Weeks before I even thought of it, they stole it. Because I've actually, for my trip to Delhi, I've actually been Googling and finding old images of Delhi.
Right,
and part of the thing I'm saying, if you're going to go travel somewhere, you find old postcards, find old images, and go and try and recreate them within a modern scene.
Right.
Yeah. What I hadn't thought of is actually merging the two things together in one shot. So I'll be doing that. I'll steal that. Copy and steal everything, folks. It always, yeah. But that's a great thing.
An interesting set of shots. I really enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, I thought it was some fairly gruesome stuff there with dead bodies and stuff. But typical New York of the era.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, I think it's a fascinating thing, and there's lots of people around the world doing stuff like that. Going and saw some shots recently in Melbourne of the same thing, of Melbourne from 100 years ago, and then recreating the modern shots of the same location.
Right.
So once again, if you want to set yourself a little local challenge to go out and shoot, find some old images of your local area and go and just capture it and see what the changes are.
That's a very interesting concept to recreate as a personal project.
Yeah, I think it's great. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I've seen where people have got their own childhood photos of themselves in it.
Right.
And they've gone and then back to that location and shot themselves in kind of the same pose and sort of recreated that look. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
right.
It's some great opportunities there for a bit of creative nostalgia.
That reminds me of I don't have the link for this one, but it was something I saw a couple of weeks ago where a bunch of adults had recreated images of themselves as kids.
Ah.
And there was just some stuff that was just a little bit creepy. I'm sure somebody in the audience will remember that particular blog post and be able to throw the link up on the Shutters Inc. Facebook page for us. But yeah, there was some weird stuff.
There was an image recently put out of the Queen of England and Prince William, her husband. Prince William? Prince
Philip.
Philip, that's him, yeah. And it was a recreation of a photo from 50-odd years ago of the two of them.
Wow.
But here's the thing, she's wearing the same necklace and the same brooch.
Oh, shit.
They're part of the crown jewels, possibly, who knows. But it was a recreation of, and it was wonderful. Yeah, it was just to see this couple together still after 50 years and looking at each other still. And it was beautiful. And we recognize their faces pretty well, but I reckon if you're ever doing any photograph of a couple of an older couple, and you've got a chance to recreate something from their youth, it'd be a wonderful thing as a present to do for them.
Oh yeah,
be wonderfully definitely. Emotive. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. Something else I saw on popphoto.com was a story of a photojournalist, a guy who has just had this mania for collecting camera bodies.
Yeah.
This guy started out in
He's got a serious case of gas.
Oh, yeah, serious gas. This guy started out with a collection that was handed on to him by his father. And initially, there were over 600 camera bodies. This guy has now taken it to almost 4,500 camera bodies. And he held the world record before he set the world record a second time, because I think he just keeps on collecting more camera bodies. So just a crazy story, but I'll put the link in the show notes.
Speaking of having a crazy amount of gear like that, if you're in Melbourne, or if you ever come to Melbourne, pop upstairs to Michael's Camera and Video and look at their museum they've got upstairs of photography. It's one of the best in the world.
Really?
Phenomenal gear. I mean, you know, gold Hasselblads, gold Leicas, Nazi Leicas, just the most amazing array of gear that you'll ever see. I mean, you'll never see a collection like it, I wouldn't think, because, you know, the family, once again, they've been collecting it for three or four generations.
Yeah, right.
And it's all on display to see, so it's wonderful, yeah.
Wow.
So if you're ever in Melbourne, Michael's camera and video upstairs.
Cool.
Worth a look.
The next thing I found, this was a great time waster, DIY Photography Net had the best game ever. It's Camera Space Invaders.
Oh.
Did you see this?
No.
It's probably written in Java because it just runs in your web browser. And basically, you've got, you know, these banks of cameras that are marching across the screen and coming down closer and closer towards you, and you've got your little turret down the bottom, and you've got to, you know, move left and right with your left and right keys and fire with your space bar and try and shoot all the cameras out before they get down to the bottom, just like Space Invaders. It's a great time waster.
If my signal drops out, Bruce, it's because I'm downloading the, you know, the bandwidth's gone for Camera Space Invaders.
So. So I'll put the link in the show notes. Of course, this week we saw Sony officially release the lenses that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, the QX10 and the QX100.
Did they?
Yeah. It was on DP Review News. So I'll put a link up for that.
Well, I'm very excited then.
And the thing that really caught my eye yesterday was Adobe announcing, they're finally listening to their customer base, photo-centric cloud subscription bundle.
Yeah.
For quite a reasonable subscription fee of $9.95 a month. For that, you get Photoshop Creative Cloud, Lightroom 5.2, once that comes out in a couple of weeks, a Behance membership, which is a, I don't know how you describe it, it's kind of like a Redbubble / 500px, one of those sites where you can set up your own profile to, you know, highlight and show your creative outpourings, whether it be photographic or illustrative or whatever, and 20 gigs of storage space and access to Adobe's training, you know, assets online. So all that for $10 a month, which I thought sounded pretty reasonable.
Pretty darn good, isn't it?
You know, considering that means that you are permanently going to have the most up-to-date version of both Photoshop and Lightroom, seems like a pretty compelling argument. Yeah, it's $120 a year. Interestingly,
I thought it was only $10 a month.
Yeah, there you go. Who'd have thought? Interestingly, Adobe have said on the webpage, and I'll put the link in the show notes, that this is not just an introductory offer. This is the ongoing fee structure for this service, so it will stay at $10 a month. Yeah. There are a couple of prerequisites. Yes. One, you must have a pre-registered Photoshop product that is CS3 or later already.
Fair enough.
So, you know, this is kind of that thing that we were talking about when they first announced Creative Cloud of, you know, you can't just let people have Creative Cloud from the word go, you know, and only sort of pay, you know, $50 a month or whatever and suddenly give them the whole Photoshop kind of thing. So I guess this is their way of addressing that. You have to have Photoshop CS3 or later to begin with, and then you can sign up for this this Creative Cloud, you know, bundle that is photography centric. The other prerequisite is that you must be signed up by the 31st of December 2013, which is not too bad. I mean, that gives us a three-month...
So what happens, a young lad next year, could be a lass,
yep,
next year, leaves school, wants to become a photographer. It's May the 6th.
Yep.
I don't own Photoshop, and I've just bought my first camera. I want to be a photographer. What happens to them?
I'm sure they will work something out.
Yeah, but, you know, that's something that should have been announced at the same time. You know, yeah. That sort of thing is like, hang on a sec, I've never owned Photoshop, but I would kind of like to, and now you're making it affordable for me to do so. Oh, what? I can't get into it?
Mm.
What about all those millions of people who use iPhoto or Picasso or all these other inexpensive or free programs who maybe want to push on but never wanted to justify the expense? What about them?
Mm.
Yeah. It seems it's great they've addressed one issue, but it's kind of like, well, maybe the majority of people are still being snubbed.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot more people out there not using Photoshop than are using Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It'll be something to watch, that's for sure.
It was interesting because when this was announced yesterday or the day before, I saw comments on various sites where people were saying, you know, why are they, you know, being so hard-nosed about, you know, having to have a pre-registered version beforehand. You would think it would be in their interests to get rid of all the pirated copies that are in existence.
Yeah.
And allow people access to the product from the word go. I kind of wonder why they haven't sort of maybe they've explored it and written it off, but maybe having something like you pay an initial...
Exactly.
Fee of, you know, $300 or $500 to get on board, to give you your initial version.
They wouldn't do it.
And then you commit to your $10 a month thereafter.
Yeah, it's the same problem, though. People say, well, I'm not going to spend $300 for Photoshop. Well, I'm going to spend $300 to register to pay $10 a month.
Mm.
I mean, right now you can get pirate version of CS6 now, immediately. So it's for the next couple of years. There's no incentive to join this method until Creative Cloud, Photoshop, CS, whatever comes out, which has significant upgrades that's worthwhile doing.
Yeah,
yeah, they're still they should have like just get make it easy for people to access. I don't know, $99, something that's within that range that is justifiable.
Yeah. So anyway, it'll be interesting to watch to see where they go with it after this year.
Let's see how that model, as they like to call these, as that pricing model works.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
What's next on your agenda, young man?
The only other thing that I had to mention, other than the interview or the guest that we're going to bring on board shortly, was really,
I can't wait.
Really interesting to see an amateur...
It's not my dad, is it?
No, it's not your dad, mate.
You haven't got my dad online to talk nice things about me, have you?
No. I couldn't find anyone.
What's to say nice things?
Yeah, exactly. an amateur photographer, amateurphotographer.co.uk, had a story about a photographer who won an art prize and stunned everybody because he was using a camera built in the 70s and lenses which were built in the 60s, you know, and it was all shot
they
on
still
film.
Work.
Yeah, of they course. Work. Of course they still work. Yeah. And I just thought it's just nice to see, that the old technology can still hold, you know, its ground against, you know, all of the digital technology we have at our disposal these days. So
wow.
Yeah, so
good,
I'll,
good on
yeah, good absolutely. So I'll put the link in the show notes. Did you have anything you wanted to bring?
I've got like 10 things. let's leave 9 of them until next week.
And just cover okay.
This. Yeah. Because it's something we said last week. We talk about this week, so we should talk about this week. And that's Carl Hemming sent us the link to the Frenizer method.
Yes.
And so I went out and did 2 test shots this week. Admittedly. Yeah. In a rush, here comes all the disclaimers and provisos, Bruce.
Right.
Admittedly, it was in a rush, and I didn't have the light was bad.
Right.
And one of my subjects was just my garbage bin in the driveway. So, you know, not the most exciting of subjects. But for those who don't know what it is, the Brenizer method, Brenizer,
mm-hmm.
or Brenizer, I don't know how he says his name.
Okay.
Is a form of panorama.
Right.
That takes into account the using a higher focal length, like 90, 135, 200 mil focal length,
yep.
and shooting a panorama with minimal depth of field. So it has the effect of like a 200 mil 2.8 as far as compression and minimal depth of field, but with the feel and width of a wide angle lens.
Right.
So you it requires you to shoot a fair sequence of photographs. So the 2 shots I did were both about a 40-shot panorama each.
So can I take a guess then that what you are doing is manually focusing first on the subject that is going to be the subject of the image,
yeah,
and then switching to manual focus so that then all of your long shots are out of focus because...
Exactly, yeah, and the other composition keeps the... So basically, what is, you've got to shoot in manual to keep your exposure consistent across the sequence of shots.
Yep.
You've got to shoot in manual focus to keep your focus point, your focus plane consistent.
Yep.
And basically, you said you start with your subject and then you build the image around it, so you start shooting right to the left, to the right, to above, to the below, and build depending on how you visualize the scene to be. You shoot and shoot and build the shot and build the composition. So I've got to tell you, I'm in love.
Yeah,
I'm in love. I mean, I don't like the fact that you have to shoot that way and take that many photos. That kind of annoys me, but I understand it, that you've got to do that to make the shot work. I don't like the fact that it kills the processing power on my computer, just knocks it down dead to be trying to merge 40 or 50 images in one shot. But here's a couple of tricks. So you also shoot in fairly low resolution. You're not shooting it raw. You're not shooting high-level JPEGs. You know, I shot my photos at medium resolution on my camera.
Yep.
Because when the final image is built with all this, the file size is so huge and the detail is so huge, it's not an issue to have a large file size.
Yep.
But I took a shot of my daughter in my garden.
Right.
By garden, I mean the 7-foot-high weeds that currently is my garden. In fairly consistent rain, it was pouring. Yeah, so the light was miserable, but it was a chance to do a test of the method before the podcast. And it's been raining in Melbourne for days, so there's not been much in the way of good light. So I took the advantage.
That's a pretty crap excuse because it rains in Melbourne every day.
Yeah, but not all day. Yeah. Sydney has more rain than Melbourne, dude. Just that we have it spread out over longer periods.
Right.
But in sheer volume, you beat us that hands down. But I think it's something I'm going to definitely try and explore in India.
Yeah.
Something I'm going to try and explore. Definitely try and explore at least a couple of shots in New York when I'm over there.
Right.
It's one of those things that look, you're not going to. It's phenomenal for wedding photographers or any sort of engagement or portrait photographer where you want one image that really stands out and looks totally different from anything else in your portfolio.
Yep.
And it certainly has that look. I mean, the customer will not know. It kind of almost has a look of a tilt-shift lens shot.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But here's one of the big benefits is that I can shoot and keep people's proportions good.
Right.
Whilst having the wide-angle effect of benefits of wide-angle composition.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm not having to deal with distortion, with any sort of stretching, or it's got that flattering compression of a face, but with the wide angle benefits of scene building. So it's kind of the best of both worlds in a lot of ways.
Yeah, right.
But like I said, it requires it doesn't require skill in shooting. It requires attention to detail is probably the best way to phrase it, to make sure you're not missing any hole. You don't want to go and do all this thing, get on your computer, wait for an hour to process and realize you've missed a whole segment, a whole square in the middle of the thing. It'd be incredibly frustrating. But definitely, I think it's worthwhile people having a look online and maybe going to have a bit of a play with if you're fascinated with it. Because I think it's a seriously cool technique for a couple of shots per shoot or a shot per shoot.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. If I can get some people to play nice with me when I'm overseas, I'll pose them and get them stuck, and then build this very different feel and look to the images,
right?
Which I think is going to add a very different dimension to things. So it's very cool, and I thank you, Carl, for sending it my way, or our way, but
excellent.
Yeah. I take back some of the things, nasty things I've said about Carl. Not all.
Should we get to our interview?
Oh, do we have to? I'd much rather just talk to you. Oh, no, you're on. If it's not my dad, I'm not sure I'm really interested. But yeah, let's do it. Let's see who's behind curtain number two.
Very happy to have joining us on the line Nathan Oxley, who is the CEO of LED Lightcube. Nathan, welcome to Shutters Inc.
Oh, thank you very much.
Lovely to have you.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, I have to say thank you to Adam Davidson, who is one of our regular listeners, who has been very prolific with his links that he's posted on the Shutterzinc Facebook page.
A real pain in the ass. just keeps posting stuff, links to this, links to that, look at this, look at that.
Yeah.
It's all just because this guy doesn't have a job and he sits at home doing nothing day in, day out. You know? Leave us people who at least work a day a week alone. You know?
Exactly. So it was Adam who brought, you know, the LED light cube to my attention. And as soon as I saw it and looked at the video, I just went, wow, this is really interesting. So for the listeners who haven't yet discovered your product, Nathan, or haven't watched the video, give us a quick 1 minute rundown of what the product is.
Okay. Well, the product is, as it says, it's an LED based light. Our goal was to create a light which was filled that little gap between speed lights and studio strobes. We wanted to be able to offer the benefits of a studio strobe in something the size of a speed light, and then also overcome some of the inherent issues with speed lights, like recycle time and the fact that you can't control the flash duration. And
lack of modelling lamp.
Lack of modelling lamp, exactly, which you can get off strobes. And then the other thing is that because of the power we're able to output, we've been able to use it as a really nice hybrid where you can flash, you can use it as a video light, or you can use it as that combination of modelling light and flashing over the top.
Yeah, right. So what's it using as a power source?
The LED is using a 150-watt emitter. And we step the voltages up and we pulse it hard.
In other words, it's using a small nuclear powered battery to run it.
Yeah, we've got a flux capacitor in the back.
Yeah. You can't get any closer than 47 feet to the light because of radiation poisoning, but other than that, but of course that's what photographic assistants are for.
Yeah, we're hoping to get it powerful enough so that if you stand a model in front of it, you can actually see her skeleton.
Fantastic. And unless you won't have to worry about fake tan, we'll be able to fix that when she gets there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Okay. So when you say fill the gap between, a speed light and a studio head, is it just a case of the modelling lamp? Is there more to it than that?
A modelling lamp was one of the things.
Yep.
Our goal was to create a small, fast, powerful light.
Yep.
And what we've been able to achieve is we're able to produce about the equivalent flash power as a speed light. So we at version one, we haven't exceeded that yet, but there are plans in the works which will get that far.
Yep.
But we're hitting an equivalent power there, but with that extra functionality of the modelling light and the ability to interlock them, to build them up as a light bank, to make a bigger and a bigger light source.
Yeah, I'll come to that. I think on the Indiegogo page you said that you've achieved something equivalent to the output power of a Canon 580 EX2, is that right?
Yeah, we're in that ballpark.
So that's basically a guide number of 58.
Wow.
Yes. Which is pretty awesome.
It's a guide number 58 at 105 mil zoom head.
Yeah.
But also it rates all the way down to guide number of 28. So it depends on what lens you're shooting and so on and so forth. So that guide numbers with a little bit of grain of salt.
Well, that's what I was going to ask was, are you able to scale down the power as you can with a speed light?
Oh, absolutely. And we can do it in two ways. We've got control over stepping down the power in increments the same as you can with a speed light, but we've also added in, because it's LED and it reacts differently to a xenon bulb, is that we can adjust the flash duration, so you can take control of how long you want that pulse of light to be on for.
And what's the benefit of that?
The benefit is that you can control and tell the flash absolutely that you want 8/1000ths of a second or 4/1000ths of a second or 1/1000ths of a second flash power, and then you can also take it the other direction and you can tell it you want 2 seconds worth of flash power.
Yeah, right. And is that how you control the output power, by adjusting the duration?
No, you can adjust the duration, and you've got a power setting as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you've got really, really fine-tuned power settings.
And to me, that's what's exciting about the product, is that it takes I'm in a location shooter mostly. I mostly run workshops on locations, and the limitations of manual flash, max sync speeds, extreme ambient light, and it just breaks that barrier, which makes a huge difference artistically as a photographer. So, I don't want to be shooting at 250 f/22 just to knock down ambient.
Yeah.
If I can shoot at 8,000 2.8 and do the same thing or whatever,
Yeah, absolutely.
So it just it takes away the limitations to your creativity, to open up a world of a different way of seeing.
Now, I wanted to address that. I understand that you can get much shorter duration of the burst of light, but does that free you up from the maximum flash sync speed that you normally are associated with when working with a studio head or a speed light?
You've still got the limitations of the camera.
Right.
So if you've got Pocket Wizards or the Photix Odins or some other kind of high-speed wireless triggering system,
yep,
then they are helping to overcome sync speed from the camera, because by default, most of your cameras that come out of the factory is they tweak the camera so that it sends a signal to the flash once it believes that the shutter is fully open, and that's normally around that 200, 250, 300th of a second mark.
Yep.
So by default, the flash power, you're kind of limited to that unless you've got a high speed triggering system or if you run a sync cable straight into the camera, and that way you can override it and you're telling the flash to fire as the curtain opens, not during the curtain being open for higher and higher speed photography.
Sorry, you're saying with a sync cable you can get past the sync speed of the camera? Or no, you're still limited by the body. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if I can extend the flash duration to say a second at full power,
absolutely.
Then of course I can shoot a burst of 8,000th of a second shots.
Exactly.
Now the first one, I'm assuming the first one I'm going to lose. I'm not going to have sync, but following shots will.
Yeah, I created a demo video the other day. I set it up in my garage. I got one of my kids. I covered him in flour. I put two of the cubes kind of behind him, so he was backlit and the flower was backlit. And I put the flash power on 1 second. I was shooting with a 580X2, so I can get about 5 frames off in a second.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I did exactly that. I did burst, and I had the flash on. I had it on 4,000th of a second, and it was just super crisp, super sharp. I lost frame.
Yeah. But that worry about synchronization becomes a moot point as long as you're not trying to get a critical shot on your first frame.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you're doing a controlled situation like that, or even something like shooting some sport where you can anticipate the action.
Exactly.
You can get some amazing stuff.
Yeah, if you're shooting with a camera that shoots. Now, I heard you were going to be testing the camera with a 1DX.
Yes.
Has that managed to happen yet?
Not yet. I've got to talk to some friends of mine who it's just a matter of timing of getting it. But we set the flashes up with an Arduino system in the office where we can control and fire that off.
Yeah.
And we fired the flashes. We got 120 flashes through the Arduino in a second, and it didn't miss a beat, and it could have gone faster. The hardware, the camera you're shooting, starts to become that limiting factor.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we don't really have to worry. Once again, depending on how you shoot or what you're shooting, the whole issue of synchronization speed kind of is disappearing.
That's where
the excitement lies. Is once again, outdoors, being able to say, okay, if I'm shooting a model on location, doing a burst of shots, I don't care if I lose frame one, as long as 2 through 10 is awesome. and it looks to be the case.
Wow.
A friend of mine, William Long, up in Queensland, he's got a couple of 1DXs, and he thought one was running faster than the other. So he did a test on them, and he said that one fired off 52 frames in 2 seconds, and the other one fired off 49 frames, but it could have been the way he triggered them, so he thought that was close enough.
Now, you just coming back to the idea of being able to stack these units together, just to what degree are you planning on making, you know, these banks of lights? Like, is there going to be a limit to how many you can stick together?
No, there's no limit to how many you can join.
There you go.
Yeah, to a degree, there is a little bit of weight in the unit. The end unit will weigh, it'll be somewhere in around kind of 450 grams or so.
Right.
So if you did join enough of them together, you could probably crush somebody, I don't know. So you want a little bit of sandbagging or something. But no, there's no limit on how many you can actually put together. You know, you could bank up 50 of them if you're able to brace them.
Yeah.
And one of the really nice features that we've got in it is that there's a small interlocking cable, and all that is, it's like it's a quarter-inch headphone jack.
Yep.
And you daisy-chain them together, and the unit at the front of the chain takes control of all the other lights and turns it into a single light source.
Nice. Now, I would imagine that will be primarily a draw to the videography crowd more so than the stills crowd. Is there anything I'm missing there? Like, is there a reason why stills photographers would have an interest in this?
Yeah, you could actually. What you can do is, even though you daisy chain them together, it basically turns them into one single flash head.
Right.
So they all fire instantaneously together. The delay between them, we're talking microseconds, so it's much faster than the signaling that we'll be running flash speeds at.
Yep.
So what you can do is as an example, you could stack eight of them together and you build yourself a strip box.
Exactly.
Or you could build them up in any kind of shape you like and create your own shape and bang them all off together.
Interesting that you mentioned the idea of building a strip light. Is there any plans at this point, or is it on the to-do list for light modifiers for the cube?
I spent last week in Hong Kong, and half my mission was for planning the next Creative Asia event. The other half was seeing people about the cube, and we've started working with a company who are experts in the areas of light modifiers and adapters, and we're fairly well down the track now of a system which will have an adapter at the front to suit basically all current brands of softboxes and modifiers, and you can tap the cube straight into the back of them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Nice. So, I mean, the way I see the advantage of strip lights, of course, is also being able to focus the light to a smaller beam. So if I want to just throw a strip of light down a model, you can do that rather than lighting a broader spectrum, which is, you know, the creative possibilities. You've got length and narrowness all built together, which you can't do easily with non-stackable lights. You can get two or three studio lights, kind of. Stands become an issue where you stack things. It all becomes a nightmare. Where if you've got something that you can stack and click together, it's much more usable and less cumbersome. People aren't going to be tripping over stuff and causing disasters in the studio or location.
Yeah.
So, and once again, this is the other big thing. We're talking, these things are location capable because it's battery operated. So, we're not talking about something that's just changing the way studio shot. It's talking about the way we shoot anywhere.
Yeah,
and that's once again a fairly exciting factor.
So Nathan, I was checking out your Indiegogo page just before we started recording, and I noticed that your original target was for $60,000 to get this project up and running. You've got 6 days left to run, and you're already at $81,000. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Now you had a next goal of $85,000. What happens at that point?
This stretch goal is this is that research into these, getting these adapter units to fit light the modifiers into the market a lot faster than what we'd originally planned.
Nice.
So because we're now further along, like I said, I've been able to now start to talk to and engage with this other group who will be working with us to bring these to market, so that as we release the cubes officially for sale, then all of the adapters will be out there in the market to support them as well.
Fantastic. And what is your goal in terms of time frame? When do you see a first shipment being available for consumers?
We're aiming to, all of our backers in the Indiegogo campaign, we're aiming to get the first run of units out to them by end of November or early December.
Cool. So that's only a couple of months away.
Yeah. We're really aiming to try and support everybody and get them out to them as a few Christmas presents, hopefully.
Nice.
The first official production run will happen in February.
Okay. And where will you be making them? Will it be China or?
No, they'll be made in Australia.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Some parts and source and elements come out of China and
sure.
other parts of the world.
Yep.
But no, this is an Australian owned and managed product.
Wow. Well done.
Well, speaking of that, we should mention price. Expected retail price.
I was coming to that. Yeah.
So these things we're talking, they're going to be around the price of a normal speed light.
Yeah.
So the price of a normal 580 or SB 910 kind of thing. So.
Yeah, a single unit will retail for around $695.
Right.
Australian dollars.
Australian dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And then
we've got three listeners in the US, Nathan, so yeah, they like to they like to convert.
And then also a four cube kit, they'll be about $2,400
right.
as a retail.
So comparable to a four head studio kit for high end, and I said for four units or a single unit price, replacing a standard strobe unit, but with a hell of a lot more versatility.
Yeah, it's four units together are starting to get into the range of what you get out of a studio strobe
in terms of
the amount of power.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really portable little pack. They'll come in one of those plastic Pelican case style.
Oh, yep.
So it's a really cool little mobile solution where you can turn up and do a mobile shoot because they're battery powered and no wires or anything like that. Is you can run them interlocked as a single head, or you can use them for backlighting, hair lighting, and you know, your key, your fill, you've got a full little solution there that would serve a hell of a lot of needs.
Now you've just brought to mind another question, and that is, how do you trigger them if you want them in separate locations around your shoot area? Can they run in a slave mode, like a speed light can be optically triggered in slave mode? Is there something like that?
Yeah, they've got an optical trigger that they'll fire off when they see a nice big spark of light.
Yeah, right.
The other way you can do them is, like I said, we've got a cube in, cube out function where you can control them triggering that way. Or take control of them.
Yep.
Which is just like a double-ended headphone jack. So you can buy 4 or 5 meter cables really easily.
Yep.
Or you can put a wireless trigger on them.
Right, and that was my next question. So you can use your pocket wizards, your flash waves, or whatever, and fire them that way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Each of the cubes has got a mini jack sync port.
Now I did see on the Indiegogo page that there was some sort of an incentive for those people who do get in early and financially back the Indiegogo project that you've started. Can you tell us a little bit about that financial incentive for the early backers?
I'm not sure.
No,
have I misunderstood it? Obviously,
I don't know.
Okay, maybe I have.
Yeah, we had an option there for those who couldn't quite afford to back us in the purchase of a cube. We did put an offer out there for a $100 option that once we go live on the website, they can redeem that and get $200 off the cube.
Oh, okay, nice. So
we put that out there as an option.
Right.
But by the time we go to air, there'll be about, I think, 3 or 4 days left on the on the actual Indiegogo promotion. So you can buy, I think, online from memory at the moment, you can sponsor a $1,500 sponsorship, which gives you four lights
yep.
rather than the normal $2,500 retail. So there's $1,000 there. I think a single light for $450, if that's my memory serves me.
Yeah, correct. Which is not quite half. The half price ones sold out pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Funny about it.
There's some value in it, we hope.
Yep.
Oh, look, yeah, 700 versus 450, I think slightly better value. Yeah.
Definitely.
So if it's piquing your interest, people, and you want to save some money, jump on board the Indiegogo and save some money right away. Very good.
And if anybody wants to get on board and become my ultimate cubist, I'll love you forever.
It's only $12,000.
Well, I'll take you to Creative Asia.
And if you give 15,000, you won't take us? Is that the...
Oh, no. I think I'd even show you a good time.
A good time's extra. Fantastic. Yeah, so jump on. We'll put a hot link into the show notes for the Indiegogo page so you can all look at that.
Yep, definitely. So,
if it's piqued your interest and if you love Flash as much as I do, get out there and buy one.
Nice. Mate, it sounds like you've really thought this one out.
Yeah, we
you hope tried. So.
And the good thing is with the whole Indiegogo is we got to a certain point and then we got bombarded with questions and suggestions and ideas, and 90% of it was really positive, and there were some things come out of it that we hadn't thought of ourselves, and it sent us into new avenues of testing and refining, and it's been an amazing process that
excellent
has given us a much stronger product at the end of the day.
That's great. Just you got to love the internet and the ability to just collaborate on ideas like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Although there's one guy who's told me that every video I've produced so far has been crap, and if I give it to him, he'll do a great one.
Only one person said that to you.
Maybe one or two.
No, I'm not saying the fact that. No, but it doesn't matter what you put out on the internet. People always come and say, "I can do this for you better. I can run you SEOs. There's always someone out there prepared to do work for you better than you can do it yourself."
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're always very happy to come forward and tell you that. You know? But I've got to say, the video you used when you shot the mannequin, there was some seriously bad sound.
Oh, yes.
And I'm not a sound guy. And Bruce here is the audio engineer, and I don't really care, but it did drive me a bit crazy with the echo.
I've got this really nice little lav system with these wireless mics.
Yep.
And we were setting up, and at the last minute we had a critical failure on them. And
of course.
And so we just end up having to resort to the inbuilt mic in the cameras, and I did the best I could with them, but
Trust me, I've done the same myself. I was reviewing some stuff for Tamron, and everyone criticised me on the sound quality as opposed to the quality of the information I was giving. It's like,
loved it.
Who cares about the echo? Look at what I'm telling you here, people. You know?
Yeah. Nah, it is critical. I know I have you a vested anal. Interest, but yes.
You anal type. Yeah.
Well, Nathan, mate, it's a great product. Very excited to see where it goes. And I wish you all the very best with the product, and hope that the launch is everything you expect it to be.
Let's get you back on next year when they're in production and out there. And
definitely.
And see where they've developed and what's happened from there, if you don't mind.
No, fantastic. I'd love to.
Yep.
Awesome. So are there trade shows coming up that you're planning on being at?
As soon as we've gone to production, we were hoping to make it to the digital show, but we're not quite there yet.
Yep.
But looks like we'll probably be heading over to WPPI in Vegas early next year.
Excellent.
We run a big expo in Hong Kong called Creative Asia. So they'll be fairly heavily showcased over there.
Fantastic.
And then we'll do the digital show, and we'll probably be hitting a full spectrum of them in the new year.
There's another show in LA that's starting off called the Big Photo Show, which you might want to look into. It's run by PMA, like the digital show here in Melbourne, but it's run out of LA next May next year, which is a particularly, they get 20 or 30,000 people through, so it could be a kind of a cool event to look at as well.
Yeah, that'd be a good one to keep an eye out. The other one we're looking at was Photo Plus, and then SWPP over in the UK.
Excellent.
Yeah. And the UK is just about to launch a new show, the photography show, I think it's called, and another big consumer show next year as well. So,
well, the other thing is we've got Photo Kina coming up in September.
There you go. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's just a little one.
Between that and CES, you know, easy to get lost. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, all the best with it, Nathan.
All right. Thanks, guys.
And we will definitely catch up with you next year.
Okay, great. Look forward to it.
Hey, that was great.
Yeah, you know, you were good too.
Thank you.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, yeah, that was fascinating stuff.
I'm really interested to see this product when it gets out to market. It's going to be very... It has the potential to be a game changer.
Well, it is. Remember a couple of weeks ago, we answered the question from Richard Clark about how has technology changed photography?
Yeah.
And I said it hasn't.
Yeah.
I said that we're really at the beginning, the dawn of a new era of change.
Yes. Yeah,
all we did was go from analog to digital.
How prophetic you were.
Pathetic. I know that, dude. But don't have to say it in front of everybody, okay?
Prophetic.
I'll try and make profit wherever I can do.
Yeah, exactly.
Boom, boom. No, but that's so. Here is a classic example of all of a sudden, the ability to extend the duration of flash to. We didn't actually ask how long can we extend it to. Can we do a 5-minute flash?
Well, as he said, you can run this thing as a video light. So, I did read somewhere on that Indiegogo page. I think there's an FAQ. The output is not as high when you're running it in constant mode, and that stands to reason because your power requirements. But you're right. We should have asked how long can you actually have it firing at full power as an extended flash duration.
Well, anyway. If you can be out there shooting a model, it's like a ballerina dancing on a beach in blazing sun at 2,000, 4,000 of a second, 2.8.
Yeah.
So you've got your 300mm 2.8 lens, you're halfway down the beach, you've got the compression, it's all going on, you've controlled the ambient light at 4,000 or 8,000, 2.8, whatever it needs to be to knock down the ambient light.
Yeah.
And but still have flash to light. It's a game changer. It really is. It's got me excited.
Yeah.
And as you can tell, I'm not one who gets excited easily.
Particularly not about tech.
No, or gadgets. Yeah. So I think that was, this is just one of these tools that is a bit of a game changer.
Yeah. Definitely.
And we're starting to see all sorts of new lighting tools coming out based around LED. I saw another one this week, which maybe we'll talk about next week, that one, another LED light tool.
Right.
Which is pretty cool. So,
okay.
Yeah, I think we're really starting to come to an exciting time in photography where we've got some change and some exciting stuff starting to happen.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Well, should we wrap it up?
Well, why not?
Excellent.
You want to start? Do you want to do the? Do you want to do the doof doof and me do the rap, or I do the doof doof and you do the rap?
Have you actually been listening? You're revealing that you've been listening, eh?
To what?
To the podcast.
No, why?
Oh,
what?
My God.
Have you been doing rap music at the end?
No.
Oh.
No. Okay, you haven't been listening. Fair enough. How silly of me to think otherwise. mate, well, you have a good week.
You and so for those just a quick wrap before we finish. Those people in Melbourne next week is the big digital show in Melbourne. Then at Jeff Shed. If you go on to that's the Jeff Shed. Is what we call the
convention center. Yeah.
Convention center. Yeah. And there's free registration on pretty much any camera store's website. There's free registration to go down and go down the show. Come and see me do some talking.
Yep.
I'm doing some talks on street photography and doing some talks on off-camera flash. So if you see me, come up and say good day.
Yeah, and we should stress too, it's well worth pre-registering because you save yourself the $20 that they're going to sting you at the door if you haven't pre-registered. All right, I think that was... Oh, you know what we haven't done in the past that we really should do? And I'll actually get...
Thank people for bothering to show up every week and listen.
Well, that too. I'm actually going to get the closer to the show rebuilt. What is your Twitter handle?
Mm-hmm. Just had a drink. That's not my Twitter handle. Just had a drink. It's
Is it at CPW? At creative?
No, it's creative photo WS. It's really kind of bad.
Ooh. No, no underscores, just all one word?
Yeah. Okay. I don't Twitter, so it's okay.
Fair enough. So if you want to follow Glenn's non-existent Twitter feed...
No, well, see, everything I do on Facebook is just linked to Twitter, so it comes up there if that's where you'd rather follow.
Oh, okay.
So,
Fair enough. Well, some people prefer Twitter over Facebook, so
absolutely.
So you can follow Glenn at Creative Photo WS.
WS.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Creative Photo WS.
It flows off the tongue, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
And you can find me on Twitter, and I'm the same. I don't tweet very much, but you can find me at Audio2U. And I think most of you already know where to find us on Facebook. So, and are you on Google Plus at all?
I am, under Glenn Lavender. That kind of doesn't roll off the tongue very well either, but you know.
and it's okay.
I blame my mum for that one. Not going to do with that.
Exactly. All right. Cool. Will you have a good week?
I will indeed.
And we will talk to you. Well, actually, I will be talking to you on Sunday morning.
Yes, we've got another special guest we're going to be talking to. It's all happening, isn't it?
It is. It is.
All happening.
Going off like a bucket of prawns in the sun.
Yeah.
So, a bit of an Aussieism for the
foreign
audience.
Yeah. I reckon people will be able to grasp the notion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, mate. Well, I'll talk to you on Sunday, and you have a good weekend, and talk to you then.
All right. Take care. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Shutterzinc, another audio2u.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shutterzincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shutterzincpodcast.com.